This is the KPTC Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In an unprecedented attempt by a sitting president to cast doubt on the validity of a national election months before a single vote is even cast, Donald Trump has repeatedly warned that mail-in ballots, such as those that have been in use in Washington state for years, and which stand as the obvious safe alternative to in-person voting in a time of pandemic, are inherently corrupt and prone to fraud, despite a complete lack of evidence for the claim. With Washington's August primary around the corner, I decided to go down to the county courthouse for a talk with Jefferson County Auditor Roseanne Carroll and Elections Coordinator Quinn Gruhl about how the integrity of our mail-in elections is assured. On a blustery day, we convened outside in the front courtyard and wore masks to minimize the chance of passing the COVID-19 virus amongst us, should one of us have it. So now, let's go inside the Compass. Okay, so I'm here with County Auditor Roseanne Carroll and Jefferson County Elections Coordinator Quinn Gruhl. And we're here today to talk about the theory that President Donald Trump has that mail-in voting is just inherently horrible and corrupt, as he put it in one of his tweets. And the reason he thinks that has varied quite a bit why don't we take some of the things that he has said specifically and address them, like, you know, one at a time. So at one point he said the reason is that mail-in ballots get stolen out of mailboxes and therefore come in from the wrong people. I mean, do we have instances of that we can recall where ballots have been stolen from mailboxes?
No instances that we can recall, but if people are concerned about putting their ballot through the Postal Service, there's 5 drop boxes located throughout the county that someone can drop their ballot off in. And then that ballot box is then checked by a team of 2 people. And the boxes, not only are they locked, but they're sealed. And we maintain a seal log to maintain the integrity of the boxes.
But how about people reporting that they never got their ballot and their ballot was just missing in the mail?
People, you know, call frequently because they've moved and maybe they haven't updated their address or they haven't received their ballot. But if they haven't received their ballot, that's not a big deal. They call us and we reissue them a ballot. And essentially that ballot, the previous one that they potentially have not received, that ballot would then be canceled. And their new surviving ballot would then be their actual ballot.
And each person's ballot, I'm trying to recollect whether the ballot actually has my name on it.
Your ballot will not have your name on it, but the return envelope has a barcode with unique identifiers and your name and your address. And then that's where you would sign and attest to the voter's declaration oath.
I see. So actually each ballot is unique and identifiable.
The ballot is not unique to you.
The envelope.
The envelope and the barcode and the code with on it is unique to you. So, but your ballots are separated from those return envelopes. So, one, your ballot is not traceable back to you, but the fact of having a paper ballot is that we have an auditable trail. So if there's ever a recount or if there was any concern, we could go back, use those paper ballots, recount, do whatever we needed to do, and there is an auditable trail.
So who here knows the history best of when and why Washington moved to mail-in ballots in the first place?
I do have a little bit here. I do have a timeline. I've only actually been the election coordinator for a year, so I don't have personal knowledge of the timeline. I think before they even... I wasn't even eligible to vote when they went to mail-in voting here in Washington State. So let's see here. In 2011, 38 of the 39 counties switched to vote by mail. And Washington legislature requires vote by mail statewide. In 2005, legislature established vote by mail as a permanent part of the election process for all elections, allowing all counties to choose. Pre-1983, Washington legislature authorized permanent absentee ballots for voters with disabilities and those age 65 or older. Other voters to request absentee ballots for each election in writing. And then 1983, special elections allowed to be conducted by mail ballot. 1991, permanent absentee law expanded to allow any voter to join the list by request. Once on the list, they receive ballots for every election. Then in 1993, small precinct vote by mail law extended to precincts with under 200 voters. Some counties begin splitting precincts and moving to all vote by mail elections.
I see. So it was really a sort of stage by stage thing. But let's continue on the vein of talking about the security of the elections and the integrity of mail-in votes. I mean, another one of the reasons in a separate tweet was he said that there would be millions of ballots printed up in foreign countries. And it was going to be the scandal of our times. And I have to admit that it's really perplexing to me to think how, even supposing a foreign country did print up millions of ballots, how they would manage to infiltrate their way in. So I don't know if you heard that quote and thought about, you know, like how something like that might work, but I don't have a clue how it would work.
So some of the specifics here about the ballots. One, the computer that we program the ballot on is completely air-gapped, meaning it's not connected to any sort of internet. The printer that it's connected to is not connected to the internet. It's basically only got power to it. If I have to remove any data off that, I use a secured thumb drive that has been cleaned by the state and sent to, or actually physically brought to us. And it's got a seal on it, so I would unseal it with a seal log, put that in that computer, and then take the data off that to then send to our printing company. So ballot stock is a specific weighted paper that's specific to our ballot tabulation system and company that we use. Ballots are printed with a unique table that has unique identifiers that it's called like a timing track. So our machine is then, our tabulation machine, once again, it is air-gapped, kept in a lock room with a seal. That seal has a seal log, and it's a team of two would enter into that room with that machine. That machine is then programmed to then only be able to identify that timing track.
So in other words, it would not be an easy matter to make counterfeit ballots.
No, and then also our machine has a printer on it that logs every single stroke that happens on that machine. Like the state always teaches us, you treat ballots like $100 bills. You always have a team of two with the ballots. So whether the ballots come in by mail or we go and pick them up at the drop box, it's a team of two. And whatever room they're in, it is locked and sealed. And the only time that it would be unsealed is if a team of two was in there with the ballots. Once ballots are received, they are then, with a team of two, they're then signature checked. So what we do is we have a scanner that scans that unique label on that return envelope. And then we physically check the signature on that envelope with the signature that we have on file. We actually go through signature verification training with the Washington State Patrol. So first and foremost, for that ballot to even go through the next step, it has to be signature checked and verified.
And then I assume you also check it off on some master list of registered voters.
So Washington State is on a system that's called VoteWaw, and it's a statewide live voter registration system. So if you return a ballot and it gets scanned, as soon as it gets scanned into VoteWaw, it keeps a record that you have voted. And so you couldn't go anywhere else in the state and try and vote. What it would do is it would flag it. It would tell me, hey, this voter's already voted somewhere, you know. So
assuming that somebody knew that I was Steve Evans and I lived where I lived, and they went and they stole my ballot out of my mailbox and voted as me, counterfeited my signature, and handed it to you. When I came to vote myself, if I went and said, well, I didn't get my ballot, and you, I would be turned away. I would be told, hey, you already voted.
So if that had happened, let's say, and it actually made it through the process, which would be very difficult. We spend rigorous time checking those signatures, making the strokes match up. Well, at that point, what we would do is we would issue you a provisional ballot, and then that provisional ballot, we would actually then go and find your other return envelope. At that point, keep that in a file. We would issue you a provisional ballot. You would then return that to us, and we would present it to our county canvassing board, which is made up of a three-person team. So it's the county auditor, a board of county commissioners chair, and then prosecuting attorney. And so we would present the ballots and the provisional ballot, well, the ballot return envelope and the provisional ballot to them to determine if they believe that voter fraud had happened at that point, or what the next step would be to, if we were to refer it to the sheriff department and for it to go further on up towards prosecution.
It seems pretty clear that with the systems you have in place, the greatest opportunity, I suppose, for corruption actually is not, it's not this worry of, you know, some foreign country printing up millions of ballots, because there would be no way of really infiltrating them into the system.
Mm-mm.
But clearly, you know, it's humanity that's corruptible. So you say it's a team of two that goes in. So it would have to be a conspiracy between those two people, it would seem. So why don't we talk a little bit about how one qualifies to become an elections coordinator? And are you interviewed for, like, you know, the strength and vehemence of your political beliefs?
So my background is project management, but maybe Roseanne should talk about this a little bit more.
Okay, so in our office, we do not allow politics to enter into our job in elections. It does not matter to us the person's name on the ballot envelope, whose ballot it is. It's a valid ballot, and we run it through the system, and we go through tabulation, and the results are the results. So as far as political, we do not even say party names hardly in the office, because we want it to be a level playing field. We don't want there to be any misinterpretation or anything.
Are you aware of each other's, like, you know, political leanings at all?
I have no idea what Quinn is, and I don't, and that to me is a personal thing. Nobody ever knew what I was until I ran for election, because you have to say who you are. So in order to run, I had to make a decision. Was I going to be comfortable with that? And so from that point on, everybody knew what I was, but up till that point, nobody knew.
Okay.
But it seems to me that perhaps other systems of electioneering are as susceptible to that form of corruption. And please understand, I'm not in any way, you know, impugning you. I'm just sort of trying to figure out, you know, how, you know, we have this unfortunate situation where the President of the United States is trying to undermine people's security in our elections, electoral systems.
We work really hard in elections, and we really, really want people to know that we are here for the people. Our doors are always open. That's why we always, for, you know, the official LNA, that's something that we should also talk about too, is we invite, our doors are always open. They can always come and observe if they have any questions.
Sorry, LNA?
LNA, so logic and accuracy test. For every election, we perform a logic and accuracy test. For like a primary and a general election, we'll actually have a state observer there to go through the process with us. So we have a We create what's called a ballot matrix, and it's a predetermined set of results for every race in every form. So we have a blank ballot, an overvote, a write-in. And what we do is we test every option on the ballot and verify that the machine is running how it's supposed to be running. So it's essentially a test deck just to verify that our machine's running the way it's supposed to be doing. And we do that to prove to the state and to the parties and to everyone that it's secure and it's doing what it's supposed to be doing.
What I was going to say is, as in the banking industry, for instance, people can forge $20 bills. There are laws in place and there are consequences. And within elections, we have so many checkpoints and things that have been put into place to keep things from going awry as far as letting things happen that shouldn't be happening.
Everything is auditable and traceable. We have a paper trail for absolutely everything. And we want people to be aware of that. That's like why for our canvassing board meetings, we present all those things there and we, you know, offer for the public to come and to view these things. Because we really want people to feel like this is something that they can be a part of, they can come watch, and that they feel good about it.
So you strive for transparency and everything.
Oh, always, always. That's why we're working on so many different options, especially in this time of the pandemic of COVID. We're working on live streaming processing so that people don't have to come in person, but they can sit at home and they can watch on their computer and they can see what we're doing. We want to keep that alive and we want to keep that there even during these times.
So let's talk a little bit about what is done by humans and what is done by machine. I mean, like, so it's actually machines that are inspecting the ballots as well, right?
So one, when ballots come in, the return envelope and that signature is verified by a human that's gone right through signature verification training, and they actually take an oath for each election that they'll properly use the best of their knowledge to do so.
It's the signature that's on file.
Yeah, so that signature is verified on what is on file, and what is on file is we capture the signature that they, when they sign, when they register to vote. So if they register to vote online, it'd be the signature that they used for their driver's license. So that is done by hand. Ballots are pre-inspected by humans to make sure that there's no food stains, boogers, like things that'll gall up the machine.
Rips, tears.
Wrong color ink, like red ink, purple ink, the machine will not read that. The company that we use for our tabulation system is a sole proprietor, so they have one of their maintenance techs come out and calibrate the machine yearly and inspect it. And then once again, that LNA also shows the calibration of the machine, so, and verifies that what we give it, it's gonna read correctly. So that would be like an overvote, an undervote, a write-in. Like, we want to make sure that it can read all those things, and then all those different, like I said, any combination of for votes for whatever party. Like I said, we have those predetermined results for an LNA.
So let's back up a second. So a damaged ballot. So you must get a certain number of those. I mean, with food stains or rips or whatever.
So
those are then hand tabulated?
No. So that's a whole different process. So if we find a ballot during pre-inspection that has got, you know, any sort of damage on it, it will then be set aside for a duplicating team. So there is a log that is kept with those ballots. So let's say there's two ballots. The log will say two ballots, and you'll number each ballot 1 and 2. So each ballot has a precinct on it. So like, let's say you live in 709. So it's gonna be a 709 ballot and it'll be number 1. You'd, on your log, number 1 would be a 709. So you keep a log of everything. And a team of 2 will then grab a new ballot, a new 709. And that team of 2, one person will sit and read the ballot and the other person will sit and mark. And so then you copy exactly what the voter had done on a new fresh ballot. You will take, once your ballot has been duplicated and the original and your log that says everything and your batch sheet of how many ballots you have and that need to be audited, You'll set those aside. A whole different team of two then will come and verify that same process. They'll verify that 709 is number one on your log sheet and on the ballot. And then they will verify that what the voter had put on their ballot is the same as what was duplicated. And then that is all on an audit log. So you have an audit log of what ballots, so ballots one and two were duplicated by so-and-so and then audited by so-and-so. And you keep a running log of all that. So everything is auditable and traceable of who did what by the teams of two.
And of course the original is retained.
Is correct. The original is retained for retention. And then, like I said, those new ballots will also have that number on it. So if you ever question, hey, audit this ballot number one that needed to be duplicated, I want to see the original of it. We'd show you the original. You know what I mean? Like, it's everything's traceable. We have everybody who did everything on it. So then those ballots would then go and stored in a secured location with the tabulator. And we have an optical security plan and an optical security machine, or an optical read machine. So then that's when the machine would read all those.
You were telling me before off mic that the machines also are capable of discerning a ballot that's printed on the wrong kind of paper.
Correct. So if the ballots are on a specific card stock and they have a specific timing track on them. So, and they even have target points on these ballots. So if certain things aren't printed within the target areas, if the timing track is wrong, if the weight's wrong.
So what is a timing track?
It's essentially like a barcode down the side of it. So that is not, so that's all programmed together. So for this election has specific timing tracks for each specific ballot, and that's programmed on that specific computer that is a hardened computer that is air-gapped, and then that program is then taken to the tabulator, and that's how the tabulator knows those timing tracks and those unique identifiers. Even if the ballot goes in backwards, it'll kick it out. It'll tell me, hey, you know, this ballot's in the wrong way. Or if it's unsure of a ballot, it'll kick it out. And it'll want you to, so then it goes through a review process. So sometimes it'll say, you know, cannot read. And essentially what that's doing is it's telling us that it thinks that something might be, like the weight might be off or whatever may be. And so that's when we would go and inspect. So
let's go back to your training a little bit. I mean, so what does it entail to be an elections coordinator?
To be a certified election administrator, you have to have 3 years of service with no breaks. You have to have 40 hours plus of training per year. And then you also have to go through an elections E101 class that then's put on by the state. But working in elections, you get a serious buzz. There's so much camaraderie. Like, we're all doing this together. And it's really exciting. It's a lot of fun. And it feels really good. Like, we're all in this together. The state is always there for us. If we have any questions, any time of the day, we always have certification and training on hand if we have any questions. And we all want to see all the other counties succeed and do well. So everyone's really in it together.
So what's it like in the courthouse on election day? I mean, how many people are involved actually on election day? Is it?
It's usually the voter registration coordinator, myself, Roseanne Carroll, and the chief deputy auditor, and the opening boards. So we have people who help us essentially open the ballots. So essentially how that works is that once the ballots have come in and been signature checked, at every point we reconcile. We make sure the numbers that ballots that have come in and received are the number that we have. So then once they have gone through the process of signature checking, the opening boards get, we have like a batch sheet that goes with them. And so it's a batch of 40. And so the clerk hires will get the batch of 40 with the signature and the name down. They will then shuffle them. And then what they do is, with those names down, they pull the ballot in the security sleeve out of the envelope and set the envelope aside. So they go through, do that 40 times. They shuffle the envelopes again with the signature down, and then they put the batch sheet and the remaining with the ballots in the security sleeves, and then they set the envelopes aside. Then once the envelopes are aside, then they pull the ballot away from the security sleeve. So never once the voter's name or anything is not attached to anything. So, they never see that.
So the privacy of the voter is really assured throughout.
Correct. So then once that happens, then that batch sheet will then stay with those ballots. That way we know, okay, we have 40 ballots in this batch. So then we keep a running total at every point and make sure reconcile.
That batch sheet does identify the voters.
No, it doesn't.
No. Oh, it doesn't.
It's just the number of how many ballots are in there, because we need to make sure that we always have the right
but
number.
The envelopes are in with the batch sheet, so no.
They go away.
No, they go away.
Oh,
that's why I said the batch sheet. So the batch sheet stays with the ballots, not the return envelope. I don't know if I was clear enough on that. It's like I'm envisioning in my head how we do it, you know, and I want to make sure that. But like I said, we're going to be live streaming this and people can actually see that happen.
So we're coming up on a primary election here.
Correct.
And you were telling me that the ballots are just going out or have just gone out.
The ballots went in the mail for in-state voters on this past Wednesday, July 15th.
And once those ballots go out, can people still register to vote?
Oh, of course. So they can register to vote up until 8 p.m. on election night. If they're in the line at 8 p.m. on election night, they can register to vote and we will still issue them a ballot.
So there is in-person voting possible, too. You don't have to be mailing in a ballot. You can come to the courthouse and get a ballot on election
day. That's if you're registering. If you need to register to vote and you do not have a ballot, the idea and the hopes is that someone will call us and I'll say, hey, I'm not registered to vote. I like to register to vote. That way we can, you know, meet them downstairs, give them a voter registration form. They can go fill that out in their car or away from us. And then we can then get that form for them, process them, get them a ballot and have them then drop it off in a drop box.
So do you have any other ideas about how, you know, this whole system might be horrible and corrupt as Donald Trump says?
I can really only speak to the facts that we work really hard to maintain the integrity and we have a lot of measures and systems and checks and balances in place to maintain that.
Washington's primary is this Tuesday, August 4th. As noted, it is not too late to register to vote, even on election day. With Jefferson County Elections Coordinator Quinn Gruhl and County Auditor Roseanne Carroll, this is Steve Evans for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon and repeats on Mondays at noon and 5 p.m. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.